Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua.
All right. Well, we're back after a little scare, a little mini scare. But everything seems to be fine, right?
Yes, everything is fine. One of my parents had a wee bit of a medical emergency. I mean, I'm making fun of it now, but like, you know, it was pretty terrifying when it happened. So
no, it's hysterical.
Yeah. So we're had a little mini medical emergency. And so, but everything seems to be okay now.
Good.
So
yay, and we thank our listeners are the best.
Yeah. So really, thank you to everyone who reached out, our friends, our listeners, one in the same.
Exactly.
I appreciate all of you, and I'm sure that your supportive thoughts helped.
Yes, I have no doubt. Sending all those healing vibes, healing energy, right?
that healing energy.
Yeah. All right. Well, yes, I'm so glad to hear that everything is all right and we can resume. So we are back.
You can't keep a good queen down.
You can't. Or a good bride in this case.
Or, yes.
Yeah, so we are back. Continuing our little bride series. So fun. It's May. It's May times. So people like to get married, or at least the start. I know it's June bride. We know. Quit sending us letters, but
yeah.
Joe's the expert, and he knows that bridal season starts in May.
Yeah, there are May weddings, especially if you live in Southern California, where right now it's beautiful outside. Summer's basically here.
Yep.
It's going to be a hot one. I'm ready for it. Well, not really, but... So yeah. So yes, May brides are a thing, at least where we are.
Yeah. So, but before that, we'll get caught up on our, usual week of things. Hello, Hemlock. Come on in. Yell and make noise.
He has a year of things to tell us.
Exactly. You know, that's so true. Oh, he's just looking at us suspiciously. Yeah. So, gosh, what was I going to say? Well, now we're in a new week, so it doesn't even matter. I went to a fun book, Friends of the Library sale. Friends of the Library.
Ah, and as a friend of the library, what did you bring?
I found these cool books. This is part of the Popular Culture and Philosophy series. So I picked up three books I found there. Hitchcock and Philosophy, Dial M for Metaphysics. Ooh. Dracula and Philosophy, Dying to Know, and also kind of a little embarrassingly, but I couldn't pass it up because I'm like, oh, I have to read this. Twilight and Philosophy, Vampires, Vegetarians, and the Pursuit of Immortality. So yeah, super fun. I started to kind of read through the Hitchcock one.
Are they all by the same author?
No, it looks like it's a variety of authors, but part of like the same series. Yeah, it looks like they're all different. But anyways, yeah, so that was kind of an exciting find. I found those, and then I bought that giant hardback collection. It's the unabridged, and I guess it's everything, Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
Yeah, super exciting. So that was kind of fun. That's what I did last week, right before... Well, when we met, and then, you know, we couldn't meet anymore.
Yes.
That was the big news from last week. I had picked those up. Cool. Really fun time. Went out with previous guest lecturer, Lara. We went. She bought all the books. And we went with our friend Becky and had a nice afternoon and had some food and then came home. Super fun.
Wonderful. How normal.
Right. It was. It was very normal. It was creepy. I mean, we had masks on and stuff at the library and whatnot, but when we went to eat, of course, you know, you're eating. And
yeah, but how normal? How novel?
It was. It was bizarre, like, how normal things are. And Now the CDC is saying, you know, if you're vaccinated, do whatever you want, live your life. We'll see. That remains to be seen if that's good advice or not.
I mean, we are horror. We are the horror learned, right?
You know, so we know we've been new.
Already been new. What's going to happen?
We done already done read this script a few times, so we'll see how it goes. But you know, whatever. Because I'm excited because we have concert tickets for the first time. Melissa Etheridge, of course, she's having a 60th birthday party here,
of course,
in a couple of weeks at the Ace Hotel in LA. And a bunch of people are flying in that we know. We got a room for the night. We're going to stay up there, which we never do because, you know, the Sam Squanch likes to come back to his own cave to sleep. But
you might as well do it up.
Yeah, I was like, we haven't seen some of these people in a year and a half, you know, since like the last show or the last, you know, whatever that we went to. And so it's like, yeah, let's go. People are flying in that we know like everybody coming. It's kind of amazing. The hotel is going to be packed full of amazing, awesome people.
Oh, yeah. This is like a family reunion.
It is. That's what I always say. Yeah, yeah. I was like, it is like a family reunion. That's why I told Jeffrey. I was like, we kind of have to stay the night like it so we can get, you know, get to see more people. Yeah, so we got a room, and then there's going to be a because a lot of the people coming in want to do the touristy things in LA, which was kind of funny because they called my one friend who's from New Jersey called, and she's like, organized this thing, and she's like, what do you think we should see? And I'm like, honey, I was like, LA holds no mystique for me. Like, I have no idea what you should go see. You know, I mean, I told them Melissa has a star on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or the Rock and Roll. What is it called? The
Hollywood Walk of Fame.
The Hollywood Walk of Fame. Yeah, whatever I'm trying to say. Yes. So she's got a star and she's got her handprints or her feet prints or something somewhere. So I was like, you know, you can go see those things. If you want to do like Melissa stuff, you can go see the Hollywood sign. I recommend Griffith Observatory, whatever the hell it's called. It's a hike. So I've only been there once. At least when we went, we had to like climb up that damn hill. You know, but I was like, no, I mean, if there's stuff you want to see, just, you know, do that, you know, just kind of search for things that you'd want to do. But they got a couple buses. And so I was like, well, we'll go with you. So we went on and we're going to do like, you know, a touristy thing with them, which should be really funny.
I wish I could be there just for that.
I know, right? Jeffrey and I are going to go up early though on Saturday so that we can go to the new Monstro Go-Go because they had moved, you know, since the last time we were up there. And now they have that big, awesome mural with like Elvira painted on it. And so I'm like, well, we have to go early so I can get some photos outside that and maybe buy something Elvira related, of course. Yeah. What else? I think, is that it? I've been rewatching or trying to finish Sharp Objects, which is old news from HBO. You know, HBO, I love HBO's mystery science theater that they do with, like, you know, they did Sharp Objects, The Undoing, Big Little Lies, and now they're doing Mare of Easttown.
Yeah, A Desperate White Woman.
Right.
A White Woman
what
with
was
Secrets.
Murder Dirter, whatever, from
Murder Dirter.
Yeah, so I love that. So I was like, you know, I never finished Sharp Objects, and I really like Amy Adams, so I've been doing that. There's a new Netflix film from Alexandra Aja, who did High Tension. Mm-hmm. It's called Oxygen. And it looks really good. It's like about this woman. It's in French, of course. And she wakes up and she's in like a some kind of like stasis chamber, like a cryo chamber. And she doesn't remember why she's there. She has no idea. And she's like trapped in it. And so it looked like a lot of the movie is like very claustrophobic, trapped in this thing with her. And she's like trying to figure out why she's in it. That was just from kind of the trailer. So I want to watch that. I'm excited.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm a little afraid to watch it before bed because I'm like, if I fall asleep, I'm going to pull that right in. And I have those kind of nightmares where I'm like confined. Like I'm in like one of those old timey, I think I've talked about this before, submarine suits, you know?
Oh, like, yeah, like a diving bell?
Yeah, like a diving suit, and I'm, like, trapped at the bottom of, like, something in one of those, and it's so freaky to me. I had a dream the other night I was trapped in a box. Ugh.
You were a man in a box.
I hate that. Yeah, I was, literally. And it really freaked me out.
Have you ever heard of the I guess, novella, but, like, the memoir or the film, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it.
But yet that's kind of what I imagine. It's like, you know, you're just like, you're fully cognizant, but like trapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those kind of dreams, they drive me nuts, freak me out, you know. But I've gotten really good at, like, waking myself up when I'm in that situation. Like, there's something about I'm lucid enough to realize I'm dreaming, so I'm able to, like, push out of it and, like, wake up, you know. But that's like, the worst. Like, I rewatched The Descent recently, and, like, there's, like, a scene where they're all crawling through, which we haven't done The Descent yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
Yeah, we'll have to do that sometime, because I actually really like that movie, but there's a scene where they have to, like, crawl through these, like, rocks, and it's, like, really tight. Oh, freaks me out, you know. And seeing that, I remember seeing that in the theater, and I was just like, this, my heart's going to stop.
Well, didn't you say you saw The Descent high? Like,
yeah, which made it worse, obviously. Right in the front row as well. It was terrible. It was the worst thing we ever did. I don't know. We saw it opening weekend. It was packed out. I mean, we had to sit in the very front of the theater, which I've never done since, and I'd never done before. Usually, you know, you get there early enough, but, you know, we were with friends, and it was late, and blah, 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 blah.
I've only sat in the very front twice. Most recently, it was to see Wanted with James McAvoy and Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman. But the very first time I did it, it was opening weekend of the first Sex in the City movie.
Oh.
And
a horror.
Unlucky,
yes.
Yes. And it was also the most fun that I had had seeing a movie up until we saw Get Out.
Nice.
I mean, it was just like, it was all like women and their gay friends and their gay male friends. And I had never seen an episode of Sex and the City, so I had no context.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I was like,
why go see that movie?
I guess.
You were just a gay being dragged along.
I was just being dragged.
By a woman.
Yes. By a car full of women. So, you know, it's fun. I love that kind of like escapism. I mean, I've done all of the 50 Shades movies at the theater, and I think the last two were actually released on Valentine's Day. So I've done them when I was single. I was doing those with my other friends, and those were fun. And you get, like, you know, you get a few cocktails, you sneak a few in, you just have a good time.
I agree. That does sound fun. I don't know if I'd want to see that movie, but are they going to do another one, or they want to?
They want to do, like, the prequel, because there is one that's like 50 Shades, the first one, but told from Christian's perspective. Because we need that. We need the man's perspective.
Of course,
you
yeah.
know? Not all men, Joshua.
Right. I like that meme that goes around where it's like, 50 Shades of Grey only works because he's rich. If this was set in a trailer park, it'd be like an investigation discovery episode or something.
Pretty much.
Which is very true. The things we allow the wealthy and attractive to get away with.
What a nice thought.
Yeah. I read Max Brooks' Devolution.
Uh-huh. And?
That was pretty fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I was read it in conjunction with, you know, Chelsea Stardust. Hello. We love her. And, like, Michael Verratti and all of them in L.A. have their Losers Book Club, which ostensibly they read a lot. I think it was, like, started out as, like, Stephen King books.
Uh-huh.
And then they trade off. So one month they'll do a Stephen King book, and the next month they do something else. Although the last couple months has been something else. So this month's read for May was Devolution by Max Brooks, who is, you know, obviously famous for World War Z, along with being Mel Brooks. Is that his name?
Yes.
Son.
Mel Brooks and, I believe, Anne Bancroft's son.
Possibly. I don't really know.
Because Mel Brooks was married to, like, Mrs. Robinson.
Right.
Like, which, you know, of the actresses of old, Anne Bancroft is one of my favorites.
Is the one.
No, well, she's not the one, but she's one of my favorites.
She's one of your favorites, I see. Keep a picture of her in your closet. You know?
No.
You should.
In my cedar chest.
very nice. That's classy. Mm-hmm. Classier. So, yeah, I finished that book. It was good. It was kind of like a horror film. You know, it's about sort of this, like, I don't know how to explain them, like, group of yuppies who think they can, like, live in the woods without knowing anything about living in the woods, because everything's going to be delivered to them. It's like a new Levittown kind of idea, like this sustainable living where once a week or once a month groceries and stuff will be flown by drone, you know, into the place. Anyways, so obviously bad things happen. They get cut off from the rest of the world. And, you know, they, none of them know what they're doing or how to like survive lost in the wilderness and an hour and a half outside of Seattle. And then the Sasquatches show up. So, yeah, it was pretty good. It was sort of like a diary. That's what it is. It's like, it's, the book is, it's like a person who's like a journalist who's like trying to like figure out what happened. They have this diary that a woman wrote while she was there, because for her therapist, cause she's like having issues. Mm-hmm. So she's documenting everything. That's it. You know how it's like in found footage movies, there has to be a reason for the camera to be on.
Yeah.
So this is, that's the reason that they have information, is that she's like just documenting everything in her life to deal with like, you know, her mental health concerns. And so there's that, and then there's like mixed in with interviews and articles about like the various people that are there, and like the Elon Musk type character, who's, this is his idea to build these places all over the world and get humans back to nature, because that's what's wrong with us. It's that we've left the trees. So it was pretty good. I recommend it. You know, I read it in 2 days. I got really absorbed in it and just powered through.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah.
He's totally going to unplug all of those things.
Oh, I know. I'm just like, get away.
What about you, Joe? What have you been doing, watching, seeing, reading, growing?
Well, I mean, you know, outside of a family medical emergency, I've been doing my second rewatch of Modern Family, because it's just fun and, you know, nice to get lost in a sitcom. This is from my other podcast, Art Time of the Month, but you know, I've been watching stuff with my parents, and, the jingle goes, "The people who made me, watching with parents." And so I've been watching stuff with them, and we recently watched a movie that came out this year, called The Vault, which is a heist film starring Freddie Highmore.
Oh, fun. I love I love a heist.
And this one's really interesting. It's Freddie Highmore, and it's the guy who played Davos Seaworth in Game of Thrones. And basically, they are trying to break into the Bank of Spain, into the most perfect and uncrackable vault, in order to steal back sunken treasure from Sir Francis Drake. And Freddie Highmore plays their engineer, who, you know, is a genius. And it all takes place against the backdrop of the 2010 World Cup, when Spain wins the World Cup, and so the people of Madrid are watching the football match in the street, and so all of the security tension is outside as opposed to inside. So they go and steal.
And where did you see this at again?
This was on VOD, so I streamed it for the family. It was really fun. I mean, it's definitely predictable, but it is, there are moments where it's just really fun. And one of the guys is Mr. Darcy from Love and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh.
And then we also recently watched a movie called The Marksman, which is Liam Neeson as a ex-Marine Corps sniper who is living in Arizona on the American-Mexican border, and comes across a woman and her son fleeing the cartels. And then, you know, hilarity ensues. So he helps them, as only a man with a special set of skills can do. And the last thing that's interesting is that so my sister's visiting right now. She's been still visiting, and she was deployed for like over a year plus, and so she's trying to get back into like, you know, figure out what she's missed in terms of popular music. And she showed me she showed me Eminem's new rap album, which apparently has like a true crime horror bent. He has a song called Alfred's Theme. Well, the album is called Songs to Be Murdered By, I think. And he has a couple songs where he samples Alfred Hitchcock's patter from Alfred Hitchcock Presents, from his TV show. And in one of the songs, he's like sampling the theme song, which, you know, longtime horror fans will know as da 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 da. And then, like, I remember, you know, I was always been a big kid, so I've always loved the idea of like stepping into like the silhouette, like like Alfred Hitchcock, and you see his like, you know, giant stomach and bald head. So that was really interesting, and totally right up my alley. And it does sound very murdery, very horror-y. So I'll be probably giving that a listen, if only to put some things in my Halloween playlist. And that's pretty much been it. Hemlock that's is in exciting. Here trying to rip that things
sounds,
off the
that
walls.
That sounds super fun. I should find those.
You should. And I mean, you know, again, it is Eminem, so you know, I don't have any idea what it's going to say. I think he made it in during quarantine because he does mention the coronavirus in it in one of the songs. But so there you go.
That sounds fun. All right. Was that everything that we
that,
you know?
That's
that
all
can't
I got.
Possibly everything we did this week, but you know.
I mean, that's what I'm willing
you
to share.
You had a lot going on.
Yes.
So.
She's going through so much. So, but yes, and again, appreciate everyone's supportive thoughts and well wishes and good juju energy.
All right. Well, I love all that. Yay. All righty. Well, then we will be right back to chat about the Bride of Chucky.
Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality.
All right, welcome back. So today, like we said, we are continuing our fun little jaunt with some horror movies that have brides in them. And so yes. the last film, or the first film in this series, was The Bride of Frankenstein. And so I thought that this was kind of the perfect follow-up to that conversation, because these films echo each other quite a lot. Mm-hmm. So we've got Bride of Chucky from 1998, written by Don Mancini and directed by Ronnie Yu, which makes this film
a horror film directed by someone who is Asian. I don't know if he's Asian American, but he is definitely Asian.
He is a Hong Kong film director.
Okay, so he is Hong Kong.
And this month is
Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage and Culture Month. So there is your representation.
You, good job. This was an accident, though.
Yes.
Like, you know, it was just one of those things where we went, oh, that's right. But Don Mancini wrote it, who wrote the original Child's Play. I think, hasn't he written all of them? I don't know why I'm asking you. Yes, he's written all of them.
One day you're going to ask me something, and it's like, I don't expect you to know this, and then I will know it.
You will know
and
it.
And that'll be the day.
Yeah, so Don Mancini has written all the Child's Play movies, Child's Play 1, 2, 3, Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky, Curse of Chucky, Cult of Chucky. He directed the last three, Seed, Curse, and Cult. So, hey, look at that. And he's also directing, writing, and producing the Chucky series that's coming to Sci-Fi, apparently this year. So yeah, super fun. And he's queer. So look at that.
Mm-hmm.
On top of all of these things.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are doing The Bride of Chucky. Okay, so
phrasing on that. That's a little interesting phrasing.
So this picks up about a month after, I think a month after the events of Child's Play 3, also known as the military school Child's Play. Tiffany, that's Chucky's girlfriend, has been looking for him for 10 years or whatever since he, you know, first died in the first Child's Play film. She's been tracking, you know, these Chucky murders and all of that, and she gets a hold of what's left of him at the end of Child's Play 3, and, you know, then this film starts. So, Joe, what did you think of The Bride of Chucky?
Well, it was definitely fun. I dare say I enjoyed it more than original Child's Play.
You're not going to hear an argument from me.
I was like, oh, I guess you really didn't need to watch, because I haven't watched 2 or 3.
Right.
So I watched 1 and that was okay. I have a feeling that I'm going to like Seed, Curse, and Cult because of, you know, it's just fun and campy and, you know, violent, but like it wasn't gruesome violence. It was very like kind of almost slapsticky.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely fun. I probably would watch this again, but I mean, it wouldn't be my go-to, but yeah, this is a lot of fun. I can see why it's such a, queer horror film. Like people talk about it, like it just, you know, in conversations that we've had, they talk about it a lot. And it just reinforced my love of Jennifer Tilly.
Like, right. Yeah, top of my list as well. I love Jennifer Tilly. I've loved her since Bound. I love that movie so much. Have you seen Bound?
No, but is that the one with her and Gina Gershon?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. It's so good. We've got Jennifer Tilly. She's plays Tiffany, both in human form and as the voice of her doll counterpart. Brad Dourif, of course, returning as the voice of Chucky. We got John Ritter, which, you know, kind of a left field thing.
Yes. Katherine
Heigl, who I think she's the low point of the film. Nick, I don't know how you say his last name. Stabile?
Stabile?
I don't know. Maybe.
Stabile, maybe. It's maybe. Probably Stabile.
So this film came after Scream, you know. So Scream had kind of come along. You know, when we talk about like horror films, you talk about like the serious tone or how horror films wanted to kind of be, you know, they're like these serious arcs. And then there are moments like especially like with the Nightmare on Elm Street series, the later films are kind of more comical or a little bit more self-referential. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this coming out kind of after Scream, this was sort of like the next logical step for the Child's Play franchise, you know, to do something that was a bit meta, funny, being very self-aware.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that I remember seeing this for the first time, and I'm not exactly sure. Let's see. It came out, October 16th, 1998 was its theatrical release date. So it probably came out sometime in 99 on VHS.
Yeah.
That's how we first saw it. Rented it on VHS from the movie gallery.
That's I've right.
Talked about before.
R.I.P. the movie gallery.
R.I.P. the movie gallery. Yes. Oh. I loved it from the get go. I just thought it was hilarious. I love the soundtrack. This definitely started my fascination with Rob Zombie's music, with Living Dead Girl, because that's the opening track. Mm-hmm. And I think that Hellbilly Deluxe came out in '98 as well. So it's just kind of that perfect, you know, synthesis of his music, and then this perfect opening number, so to speak.
It fit really well. And
it did, yeah.
And I'm, you know me, it's like, if I know the song, like it's, I'm just going to be grooving the whole time. And I was really surprised. I was like, oh my God, is this Rob Zombie?
Is this La Zombie?
Is this La Zombie?
But it, yeah, so we've got, you know, obviously the great, great soundtrack. It is, again, very tongue in cheek when they, when the film opens, you know, you have Bailey, the cop, is going and breaking into like the evidence locker, and we see like Michael Myers' mask, and there's like Freddy's glove, and there's a chainsaw, and there are just lots of little things that, you know, speak to this, you know, larger space of horror and, you know, this, the universe, which I guess means that all those things exist in the same universe.
Yeah,
you know,
and they do mention the town, or at least the police department that those things are being held in, but like, even if you forgot the town, it could be anywhere,
right?
Like, that's the point, right? Is that all of those films could take place in the same town,
could be, yeah, or just in the same, you know, general, where whatever evidence locker they're using.
Yeah.
Either way, it's nice, like right at the beginning, it's just a nice little kind of call to those other films. So like we were saying earlier, this is very much a kind of a, not an inverse, but I think a really nice reflection of The Bride of Frankenstein. So not only do you have like that beginning sequence of Tiffany like putting Chucky back together, which feels very Frankenstein's monster. He's very stitched and she's pulling from other doll parts and, you know, kind of reassembling him. But then there's just lots of other echoes throughout.
Yeah,
the film, you know, that obviously she watches The Bride of Frankenstein. That's a big one. So I'm going to try my best to talk about this article I found.
Leave it to Joshua.
Yeah,
to find,
I can't believe
article.
I found like an academic, like it's a whole chapter in a book. So I mean, it's not even an article; it's like a chapter. So we're going to do our best to kind of talk about some of these things. So it's called Neo Splatter, Bride of Chucky and the Horror of Heteronormativity. So there's a comment where she's putting him back together that I really liked. Let me see if I can find it. It's this is so like dense. And I had to like, let me tell you, dear listener, I had to dig to find this because I was looking up like, analysis of Bride of Chucky. A lot of reviews obviously come up, but when I found this article, it was like behind a million paywalls, so it took forever. And like, since I'm a student, I thought, well, that'll be easy, I can just find it. So I went into like my school's library and, you know, did real, you know, research trying to track this damn book down, which actually, what's the book called? It's like Post-Feminist Gothic.
Yes, Post-Feminist Gothic.
Yeah, is the name of the book.
And it's like, it's a bunch of different chapters are written by different different
people,
right?
It's like a textbook kind of dealing with lots of different things. So I got it. I have the whole thing now because I found a free PDF. Sorry, I would buy the book, though. I will be honest. I would buy it. But for now, I'm going to hang out on the... on this free version of it. So anyways, I like this kind of talking about that beginning of the opening credits. So they call it a reverse castration by which Tiffany rebuilds her plastic man. Again, this is Neo Splatter, Bride of Chucky, The Horror of Heteronormativity by Judith Halberstam. So let's see, what does she say about, I kind of like this. So Tiffany opens her mouth to reveal a plastic eyeball. She pulls the eyeball from her mouth and pushes it towards the camera viewer and into place. With his eye intact, Chucky can assume the male gaze, and Tiffany takes up a seductive pose as the object to be looked at. I love this whole, like, and then it's like, this is Chucky's back. I love that kind of idea of like, because this film, I think, is sort of feminist in some ways. Again, feminist for 98.
Yeah.
You know, so this idea of being kind of aware of like the male gaze to some extent of like Chucky, you know, that whole sequence where she's like there seducing this doll. It's just, I don't know. It's just kind of a nice moment. So what else? There's so many good things in here. Talking about, again, that reverse castration idea is that because he uses his arm to like stab people, that sequence of like pushing his arm back into place. It's like her giving him like his phallic power.
Because as we know, right, from Men, Women, and Chainsaws,
right.
Yeah, the knife is phallus and the final girl, you know, it penetrates her enemy.
Yeah, well, and that's something else that's talked a lot about in this piece is that there isn't, like, this is not a film that has a final girl. You know, really, you have this couple, you have a series of couples. I mean, again, I think that's why they're saying this is like the horror of heteronormativity, mm-hmm. is, you know, you have Jesse and Jade, that's the Catherine and Nick, the young couple, you know, mm-hmm. young love. You have Chucky and Tiffany, who represent sort of, they're not married, obviously. But
they're complicated. But
yeah, exactly. If they were on Facebook, it's complicated.
Would yeah. be
absolutely their relationship status. And then there's the couple that comes in to rob, that robs them later, and then they get killed, which we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. And then the old people later that they whose RV they take. We don't really meet those people. We mm-hmm. just see them stuffed in a closet.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that's sort of the conversation they're having about this horror of heteronormativity, because it says here that talking about like Chucky, especially at the end where he's shot dead by his bloodthirsty spate of murder seems reason enough for his death penalty. We are still left to wonder whether he might have been the good guy after all. He and his foul-mouthed bride have delivered searing critiques of romance, domesticity, love, and couplehood throughout their ghastly Bonnie and Clyde run, and the relationship is a testament to the horror of heteronormativity. Which, I mean, obviously throughout the movie, like, those are some of my favorite scenes where they're like talking in can we just let him in?
I'm letting him in now.
And yell. And he keeps making me lose my train of thought. Listen to him scream out there. No.
Working from home is hard when the children are screaming.
Oh, right. The screaming of the children. Anyway, so when they're like sitting back there and like Jesse and Jade are all like, oh, we love you. And then Chucky's like, I give it 6 months, three if she gains weight. Like they have this kind of constant conversation. Just open the door and leave it open.
I was going to say.
That way he can just.
He can decide whether or not.
Come and go. Yeah. Yeah. So stupid. Oh,
but continue.
Oh my gosh. I keep getting like lost on my train of thought. This is why cats are assholes. Anyway, so I guess my point was that this film isn't really have a final girl because it's subverted by the couple, Jesse and Jade. They kind of are both, you know, final boy, final girl types. And then Tiffany herself is sort of an interesting place because as the bride, because she starts out the film as... all she wants to do is bring her man back mm-hmm. to life, you know, and help him, you know, I guess, find a new body. Conveniently, Jesse's would be fine. But of course, she finds out that, like, Chucky is a real dickhead. You know, he hasn't changed in 10 years. If anything, he's worse. And so she decides to kind of say, fuck it. I'm just going to keep you trapped in my house and you'll be subject to my whim. But obviously that doesn't work out too well for her and is her undoing.
Chucky's got some other ideas.
Yes. Which again, that's a whole great sequence when she is watching The Bride of Frankenstein and this is what another reason I love Tiffany, because she's like crying. Like I think she would cry at the end of The Fly as well.
Did you hear how hard I eye rolled a listener?
Because it's so sad, you know, just like we belong dead, the whole thing. And then Chucky, you know, obviously pushes the television into the bathtub and she dies. Wasn't that a cool sequence though, with the TV floating in the water and just those like the juxtapositions of, you know, of the music from The Bride of Frankenstein and the imagery from that and like Tiffany in the bathtub. It just all... although that's a really nice trailer. Like I want to see a trailer that has like a big bathtub like that.
that was like the inside of the Spice Girls bus in Spice World, where it's like the TARDIS, where it's bigger than it's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
I've never seen that movie, but I should watch it because I bet it'd be horrifying.
I know the next time we have musical day what I'm bringing.
Is it just their music, though?
Yes, but okay. So I should have said this in the beginning, but I did make James watch Spice World last week.
Oh.
And because we've been talking about it with Eve Parker on our, you know, on our weekly movie nights, and you can't stream it anywhere anymore. So I went on eBay and bought a copy on eBay for like $15, and the original like DVD. Unopened. I think it was like the DVD that they gave away to video rental places.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, yes. So it's kind of like that because she has like what? She has her whole collection plus this like
creepy doll,
plus this bedroom, plus a like bathroom that has like a freestanding clawfoot tub in the middle.
I love it. Let me tell you, I've been inside some fancy trailers. I will tell you that. Like they can be very fancy. It's not completely out of the realm of possibility, but it just was very like, I wanted to know what is she doing for a living? What is happening here that she's got this like boosted up trailer? I was just kind of curious about all of that. Anyways, the point was Chucky's Bride is a classic slasher film victim. You know, she's the one who believes her man can change, who sticks by him despite his violence and abuse, and who dies trying to save his latest victims from his rage. She is the phallic mother at the start of the film. That's the idea of putting him back together and, you know, returning him to, you know, some sort of form. The subjugated wife later on. And finally, she is all body, all matter, just a womb for a new monster, another sequel, Seed of Chucky. And then it kind of goes on to say that Bride of Chucky is overtly feminist in a way that the final girl splatter films could not be. Tiffany, one of horror film's finest castrating bitches, again, their words, not mine, delivers powerful feminist speeches in defense of equal rights and marriage, and she ultimately kills her mate, or tries to, rather than allow him to humiliate her further. But although it amounts to a scathing attack on the institution of marriage and the resulting forms of domesticity and family that marriage engenders, Bride of Chucky no longer casts the masculine final girl as an alternative form of womanhood. Independent, physically strong, emotionally autonomous, and implicitly queer. Instead, let me just see here. Well, no, I think that's good enough from that part, because like you were saying with the phallus that happens in that we talk about in Men, Women, and Chainsaws, you know, for Clover, the final girl is this site of shared masculinity, you know, for the male viewer, a conduit for forbidden male masochistic fantasies, and she provides evidence of elastic modes of spectatorial identification. there's a word for you. You know, sometimes she's androgynous in look and name. She's got survival skills or, you know, her ability to wield, you know, weaponry, her distance from heterosexual romance. She becomes sort of a potent symbol of rebellion and female masculinity. So that's kind of like Clover's idea about the final girl, which Tiffany obviously really subverts a lot of that because she's, you know, sexy and, you know, all of these other things that, you know, the final girl often is not.
Yeah. The final girl is Jade.
Like, right. Yeah. Ideally, but not really, you know, to some extent. Like, she is, but I don't know. I feel Jade is so underdeveloped. You know, like, really, nobody in this film matters more than, like, Chucky and Tiffany. Like, this is one of those, the other thing that this film did really well is the first few Child's Play movies are kind of about all these other people, and then, like, Chucky's there, like, instigating the action, but it's not exactly his story. It's about people surviving him.
It's the way that, like, original Halloween, original Freddy was, like, it's about the people that, they're just the monsters that show up occasionally that they're running from. Whereas, like, in this one, and then in Bride of Chucky, Chucky's is his own, like, larger-than-life character.
Right, exactly. So, again, that's why it's, like, I feel like, you know, a lot of the characters like in other horror films, like the slasher, the killer is like, you know, kind of anonymous, we don't really know their story or their motivations. Chucky's a little different because you kind of do know in the film, like, he's a murderer and he's a bad guy and transfers his body, and then his goal is to get out of the body. So we know his motive, but he's not, like, super developed. So this, you know, you put him with a girlfriend, quote unquote, and they kind of bounce off each other. You kind of learn things about Chucky's views on marriage and on women and men, and, you know, it's just, you know, it kind of refocuses. So again, you know, a lot of the other characters I think are a little more underdeveloped. You know, you've got, like, okay, we've got Romeo and Juliet, you know, that's kind of Jade and Jesse, or that kind of thing. You know, he's from, like, the wrong side of the tracks. It's very stereotypical. So yeah, it's hard to see Jade as, like, a final girl, because I don't see how she's, like, how she transforms, you know?
Exactly. Because we don't know much about her story, she doesn't have the Sidney Bristow of it all, right? She doesn't have that kind of...
Oh, Prescott, yeah.
Prescott.
Yeah, Prescott. Yeah,
who's
yeah,
Sidney
yeah.
Bristow? Sidney Bristow is the name of Jennifer Garner's character on Alias. I'm so sorry. Sidney Prescott.
Prescott.
She's not your Sidney Prescott, so we don't know that she's not overcome anything. And you kind of get that a little bit, because it's like her parents are dead, her
right, she
uncle,
has a, yeah, of course. She's got a little bit of a backstory, and, you know, John Ritter playing a bad guy is super fun, you know, because, again, it's sort of like the John Lithgow thing in Dexter, you know, of, like, seeing him play, like, this total asshole. Fuck the police, I wrote that down. It's always a good time to write that down, but specifically in this film, that whole conversation of, he's the chief of police and he'll do what he wants. Yeah. Fuck that guy. Rest in peace, John Ritter, of course.
Yes, rest in peace, John Ritter. But fuck that character.
But yes,
Walter, right?
Yeah, so it's sort of interesting that, you know, again, just to kind of take it back to Tiffany, that there's this sort of flipping of, you know, this, she's kind of playing that role where she's a killer and she's kind of part of this Bonnie and Clyde narrative with Chucky. But she's also, you know, she's got the wisest mother in the world, who's just laid into her all kinds of things to keep in mind. You know, men, you know, you spend all day slaving over a hot stove. Least he could do is the dishes, you know, treat your woman right. Lots, you know, she's there. She's got a quip, a little bit of wisdom.
Something for everyone.
That she's taken to heart, you know. She'll kill anybody, but only sleep with somebody she loves. This girl has morals and a code of ethics that she's living by. And she doesn't want to put up with any of Chucky shit. And I think I just think it makes for a really nice... just throughout this movie, they're kind of echoing these other relationships around them, and commenting on them is really lovely. 98. I feel like Martha Stewart was a bigger presence in the world then.
Absolutely. Well, this is pre, you know, insider trading.
Right.
Her, like, TV biopic with Cybill Shepherd playing Martha Stewart.
I forgot about that. Oh yeah. My gosh. Oh, that's so funny. I used to watch the shit out of Martha Stewart. And also my favorite was, what's it called? What's Up, Martha? Or it was her daughter with, like, her friend. It's like her daughter and what is her name? Alexis? I think her daughter's name
probably
is Alex or Alexis or something like that. It's Alexis with this other woman whose name I can't remember. She's got, like, three or four names because she's rich. But they sit and they watch old episodes of Martha Stewart living and make fun of it, or try to cook the thing or make the craft or whatever. And anytime Martha tells, like, stories about Alexis growing up, she's like, that's all bullshit. Like, I was not allowed in the kitchen as a child. I didn't do any of those things.
That's right. Because Alexis famously, like, it's not, like, on speaking terms with her mother, right?
They weren't for a while. Then they did this because it was produced by Martha. So I couldn't believe... When we used to watch it, it'd be amazing the stuff they got away with, you know, because it was just like, wow, I can't believe she's letting them do this. But at that time, Martha needed that because this was after, I think, all of that went down. So she kind of needed, like, the image scrub, I think, a little bit. Yeah. And this really helped.
But now she's embraced being a felon. You know, she hangs with Snoop Dogg.
Now it's part of her image. Anyways, the point is, all the Martha Stewart stuff is pretty entertaining. The idea that Tiffany... in her little trailer, is living her Martha Stewart fantasy. You know, it's just... Like, can you get more, like, that is so, I feel, like, heteronormative. You know, again, this paper talking about how this is sort of a conversation about, you know, the
unbearable heteronormativity, heteronormativity.
You know, what? You know, when you get married and, like, you lose your personhood, especially for women, you know, that marriage is sometimes, you know, can be like a death, you know, for some women, not all women. And obviously that's changing, and we are shifting, hopefully, away from that sort of ownership that marriage implies. But her, like, and as unconventional as the rest of her life is, she's gothy and, you know, creepy. She is watching Martha Stewart and, like, dreaming of hosting parties and things that I guess when Chucky finds a new body, like, they're just, that's going to be their thing. Like, they're going to get into new bodies and start this new life as a happy couple in the suburbs. It's just, the whole concept is, it's kind of bonkers. What else? Let's see.
I hope Catherine Heigl comes back for the Chucky series. That would be fun.
Oh gosh. I don't know. I hear bad things about her. I hear she's not a nice person, and she's not, I don't think she's a great actress, but I don't know. You've probably seen her in more stuff than I have. This is what I know her from.
Oh, I definitely have seen her. She does, recently she has addressed her bad reputation.
Her bad behavior.
Yeah. She had, it was a bad reputation given to her by, like, other men in the industry.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard that from lots of places, though, but I guess maybe that's the thing.
I'll have to send it to you because it's like, it's related to kind of like the whole Sharon Stone of it all. You know what I mean? Like the kind
and
of
Sean Young and all.
Exactly.
Yeah. 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 Which, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Again, I think she's always been in stuff that, like, I happen to see her in this because this was a horror film, you know?
Exactly. You probably haven't seen, you know, When You Wish Upon a Star or 27 Dresses or Knocked Up.
Nope.
Or, yeah, you're fine. Yeah.
Wasn't she on TV, too, for a while?
Grey's Anatomy.
Okay.
Grey's Anatomy and the Shonda of it all, the Shonda Rhimes of it all, and all that stuff.
Yes, she should get all the things. She should just have her own network.
Yeah, I do love Shonda Rhimes just because she was like, she worked for Disney when she started her production company, and she was like, you know what, Disney's got a land, I'm gonna have my own land. It's gonna be Shonda Land.
Yeah, I love it. She should. Anyways, what was the point of all that? What were we talking about? Oh, you were talking about Katherine Heigl. You just want her to come back.
Yeah, I just want her to come back in the Chucky series because I think that would be a great callback to see where Jade is now.
Right. Yeah, probably long broken up from Jesse. You know, teen love just does.
Or unhappily married.
Right. You know, maybe thinking Tiffany had the right idea all along. Mm-hmm. You know, stab the bastard.
We belong dead.
Right, exactly. So that goes back to the echoes of Bride of Frankenstein with that comment, you know, near the end where she's, you know, telling Chucky, this is unnatural. We got to die and meet up in hell together.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously we know there's a sequel to this. There's, you know, so that didn't quite go that the way that
they wanted. No,
I'm trying to make sense of some of my notes here. You gotta love the trailer trash voodoo for dummies.
Yes,
mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's wonderful. I wonder if there is a Voodoo for Dummies book. I bet there is.
Probably.
That whole thing was entertaining. I guess that's one of the that's one thing that's sort of like a problem with the Child's Play series is it has had one writer, so it does have more continuity than most other franchises that kind of bounce around a little bit. But this one is pretty clear. You know, the story stays fairly linear. But the whole like Heart of Damballa thing has always kind of confused me with this because, you know, he spends three films trying to put his soul in other bodies without this amulet. So I guess they just needed a thing. So that's a little bit of a retcon That's kind of always bothered me. Like, well, what was the point? I mean, I guess it's because it does help make it sort of like a road movie and gives a little more.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things that was created to give them a reason to go on the road and travel. Which reminds me, you know what you haven't even talked about yet is David, little gay David in the film.
Yes.
Who actually is sort of interesting. When I think about gay characters in horror films, and you think about like the 90s, 98, I mean, when did Will and Grace premiered in 98, right?
98, 99, yeah. Yes.
You know, so, but there, even in that first season, there's still a lot of like minstreling going on.
Mm-hmm. He's got frosted tips and a little earring on his left ear.
Right. But what I think is interesting about David is that there's not really a comment on his sexuality, which I think, again, is Don Mancini kind of trying to write a queer character who just happens to be queer.
Yeah.
You know, and again, this is early. This is before like Queer as Folk. This is before, obviously, now where, you know, You might be introduced to a character and they just happen to be with somebody of the same gender and nobody mentions it. Nobody.
Their boyfriend shows up and kisses them in front of a locker.
And it's not a story point. It's nothing. And I kind of like, I always liked that about this movie. I remember when I first saw it and thought, gosh, you know, there's not really conversation around him being queer. Like, it's just a thing. And in fact, when he's trying to do her a favor, although, you know, it's that whole uncomfortable situation, you know, where instead of her being like a beard for him, he's there to like help her out, you know, so she can meet up with her boyfriend and, you know, make out in the back seat somewhere. They like rely on him throughout the movie, you know, talking to him about being afraid that the other one is the one killing people. You know, he shows up to try to help their relationship again, the, you know, that queer best friend trying to help the straights. And then obviously, you know, gets hit by a truck, which that's kind of like the truck represents marriage. Cause as we know, like as soon as you're gay, as soon as your best gal pal gets married, that truck of marriage runs you over and you never see her again.
Wow, that is a pull, but that is, you are stretching it, but you are being poignant, because that is
teasing, but that is a that
but
is
that
a
is
trope.
A thing. Yeah, that is a thing.
That yeah, the
I mean, it's women. Also a thing. It could also go both ways, right? Because like the moment that David gets a boyfriend, and you know he's gonna move to Vermont or whatever the fuck.
Well, back then,
the Castro, wherever, you know. He's gonna like leave her,
right?
Oh man, I mean, it's interesting.
No, I just think he's a rare kind of queer character.
Yeah, and I mean, like again, like I think looking back on it now, you know, there would be a whole area. There's a whole area of scholarship of queer fandom that would be like, oh, another movie where we kill the queers. Or, you know, where it's that trope. But again, like, you know, it's Don Mancini who wrote it. So it's true to, like, the spirit of that time. And so, you know, I'm just saying this preemptively for anyone who's listening to this who knows about the trope of the kill your queers. And it's like, well, you can't really, I mean, Don Mancini's gay. So it's like there was obvious, you know, something had to happen, whether it's like notes from the studio or just how it ended up falling into place.
Yeah, he's really the only character you like.
Yes.
Who dies. That's the other thing, you know? So I guess you kind of have to, like, if you know you're not going to kill off your main couple, because again, they're sort of replacing that final girl conversation. Although again, I don't really think that's the conversation happening with them, but still, you know, you're not going to lose them. Who else are you going to really care about? And David is really the next one who is, you know, he is sweet and he's like, you know, take Jade and get out of here. And they, you know, Jade and David have that nice little conversation about, you know, this terrible thing that happened with his, you know, guy that he was seeing. And, you know, and they kind of share this moment. So it's like, really, he's like the only character you really like, if you like any. Like,
and the kill your queers thing kind of functions in two ways. Like with, you know, obviously looking back, hindsight, right? You have a explicitly queer character, David, but then you also have Alexis, who, you know, I mean, at the time is presenting, at least in the film, presenting male.
Yeah.
presumably, I'm assuming, still using he, him, his, not...
I don't know. The history around Alexis Arquette is a little murky because they did transition and go by female pronouns for a while, but then they kind of backed away from it. David Arquette has said that Alexis had had told him that they felt gender suspicious is the term that they used, and that and I'm just using they pronouns just to, you know, just to be kind of, you know, I'm not really, I'm not exactly sure how she, he, they would have wanted to, you know, again, I think
be known.
Rosanna, is that her name? Rosanna Arquette. I think she used female pronouns.
And Patricia
when Alexis died. Patricia did, yeah. You know, so I think there was, it was sort of murky. At the end, it was sort of like Alexis kind of stepped back from that. And with some, it was sort of like, how am I dressed? You know? And I think there was also an anecdote that as they were dying, they said that they were like, they visited the other side and that there was no gender. And that they were looking forward to being in that space where they would no longer have to have that sort of conversation. Regardless, at this time, Alexis had been in Wigstock, the documentary film, was known for doing drag and gender performances as a woman. So, you know, it's still, there is that other sort of layer of queerness of Alexis being in the Pride of Chucky. And that's a great character too, like this sort of wannabe
murder gothy.
Yeah, that whole sequence of the character him. What's his name? Damien.
Damien. Yeah.
But he's got a different name. He's got a real name like Robert Hap something. You know, it always makes me think of Ralph Hapchat from.
Rocky Horror. Yeah.
That's like the name is what is in my head, even though I know that's not right. But Damien is, you know, has faked like murdering this guy, but it's his self with like the black nail polish. He's terrified of Charlotte the Spider. He's obviously doesn't have it in him to really be in this world, which I thought was also kind of a comment on like Marilyn Manson to some extent.
Yes. You know,
if you've seen like those pictures of Marilyn Manson out of Marilyn Manson drag and when he was a teenager. So just that whole, I just thought that was a nice little comment on, again, this sort of hetero world, you know, hyper masculine world, you know, where this guy is trying to fit in and, you know, and be thought of as some brutal killer. But, you know, just a total poser. And he seems, again, like the kind of guy, like if he would just be like be himself and that Tiffany could have been probably happy with. He would have wanted to take care of her, but he's trying too hard. And she's got it bad for a killer doll.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? How can you compete with that? So again, this movie is very, very queer in a lot of ways. Just see if there's any other, you'll just have to look up this book and read some of this stuff. There's things in here about Chucky representing like a lesbian phallus.
You know, the old trope of Chucky as strap-on.
Right. You know, cause there's a whole conversation about this, in the movie about like being a real man and, you know, being plastic or being rubber, a hunk of wood. You know, so it's sort of like this analyzing Chucky in this weird.
And the only sex that we do see is between like, you know, it's between two people who presumably cannot create life.
Right. Well, right? Yeah, in shadow. Yeah. God, the two of them. Right. Yep. That's a whole other,
which like harkens back to Bride of Frankenstein, where it's like, you know, two men creating life. This is literally two quote unquote inanimate objects.
Right. Who create,
who end up creating life.
Chucky.
Yeah.
That was another kind of cool scene before that. So we're talking about like the puppet sex, doll sex, whatever you want to call it, between Chucky and Tiffany. The couple that kind of breaks in or comes in, it's like they're con artists, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they come in, you know, to Jade and Jesse's room and, you know, try to get them to have a foursome with them, which mm-hmm. I think is highly entertaining. Like, I kind of want to go now and do that. Let's just like show up at like newlyweds places. Like, clearly you're over each other already, right? You got married. No, but you know, I mean, seriously, that whole conversation is just gross.
Yeah.
But anyways, when they go back into the room, I think it's sort of interesting because they start playing around and, you know, you see this point of view that you're used to in the Child's Play movies, like from Chucky's point of view of like wandering around. And so you think, oh, you know, Chucky's up to something, but then it turns out to be Tiffany. And that whole sequence, I like, you know, how she's kind of watching them on the bed. It kind of, again, subverts like that, the male gaze, you know. Now it's Tiffany and she's like watching them. And then she's like watching them through the mirror before she throws the champagne bottle at it. And all the mirror comes down and kills them. It's just this spectacular scene, you know, that total aphrodisiac for Chucky. Like, ah, now I get it. Stabbings are out. You know, this is art.
Yeah.
my bride is an artist. And then they do their thing.
Also, top five deaths for me. I mean, what is it with death by like a champagne or like a wine bottle, you know?
Right. Like in Freaky.
Yeah.
And then the waterbed exploding and all the blood. It's just, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a really cool sequence there. I had a Movie Maniacs, which was this like Todd McFarlane line of toys. I had a set. It was Chucky and Tiffany from The Bride of Chucky, and it came with a little the champagne bottle.
Nice.
So, and a tiny little cigarette. It was actually really cool, and it got stolen. The old place we lived in, the neighbors downstairs, they like went through all my boxes in storage and like stole a whole bunch of stuff. So whatever. Bizarre. But that was some of the stuff they took. Because I had a whole bunch of Movie Maniac stuff, and they took it all. They were not well, so I was just like, I don't care, fuck it. We're moving. Let's get the fuck out of here. Anyways, so yeah, that whole sequence again, like it subverts, you know, sort of that like the voyeur being and it being Tiffany this time and not Chucky. And then after that, who shows up? But sister, what's her name?
Oh, Sister Mary Patrick, a.k.a. Kathy Najimy.
Yes. I was so excited for that scene to come because she's only in it for like a minute. But I'm like, oh, Joe's going to. It's a nice little
I was
surprise.
Like, Kathy Najimy? Like, this is everyone from the 90s.
Yeah, it's another Who's That? okay. Well, what else? I really like this movie. There's lots of parts of it that make no sense. Mm-hmm. it's bonkers, but I like a lot of the music in it. I love Jennifer Tilly. I love her voice. You know, just her whole character is great. And again, I think it echoes a lot of stuff, a lot of the messaging in Bride of Frankenstein, which we talked about last week, is again a very queer film, has a very queer history. But in the end, what is preserved? Like the heterosexuals, you know? So at the end, Jesse and Jade are alive. They're free to you know, get some trauma therapy and move on with their lives to be happier and hopefully forget all of this insanity. You know, you have, again, like we said, she's watching Bride of Frankenstein. There are lots of little moments in it. There's lots of callbacks to other things, you know, when they shoot the nails all into John Ritter's face. It's, yep. you know, a nice little pinhead comment. I'm just thinking of other like fun parts. I love when the stoners are like rude fucking doll. Like that yeah. still just makes me laugh because it's just such a funny little moment in this weird movie. Yeah, I don't know. What does this tell us about marriage? You know, besides don't marry a doll, I don't know.
I think it tells us more than anything about, like, obsession. Because,
right.
you know, the whole thing is like she for the last, what, 13 something years has misunderstood, 10 years
yeah.
has misunderstood that Chucky never was, had ever intended to propose to her.
Right. Yeah. She thought they would live happily ever after. You know, she had this very, again, when you look at like those stories like Bonnie and Clyde and, you know, there's other like, you know, the girl is like young and, mm-hmm. you know, she's in love. And so she kind of had hung on to this idea for a decade, you know, and didn't move on, didn't find somebody else to be in a relationship with or whatever, you know, instead she waited out for this awful dude, you know, to come in, to come back into her life and then to find out like everything she believes. Yeah. It's a total lie. So yeah, do your background checks, friends. Make sure before you marry that guy, you know, if he's really the one you want to marry.
Yeah.
Which, again, if he's murdering people, I don't know. That may just...
And that could be your thing, but, you know, just...
Are we kink shaming?
Yeah, just make sure. Just be sure, I think, is what we're saying.
Right. Beyond that, I mean, yeah, it's just... I thought this was a fun movie to watch. It's I'm shocked I found any serious academic reading of it. But I did enjoy this... chapter. It was fun to read and fun to you know, apply some of the conversation, but I mean it's bonkers. Like, this is really deep stuff that they're applying to Bride of Chucky, which I love. I mean, hey, if that's not what we're here for and about, then what are we doing?
Why is Fright School
why
here?
Why is Fright School?
Yeah. Why is Fright School? Yes.
trying to see if there was any little last thing. No. You know, just Tiffany's feminist rage at Chucky. Ah, the motherfucker. all right. Well, I think that's good enough for now. We'll be back next week with another bizarre bride film. So we hope that you, if you've not seen The Bride of Chucky, check it out. I mean, I think it's worth it. It'd be a fun, like, Friday night movie.
Yeah.
Our friends over at Horror Movie Night did an episode recently about The Bride of Chucky. That was funny. I listened. Of course, they're always funny. We love those guys. But, you know, they had some good comments, you know, and some good pairings. So go over there and check it out and see, you know, put a movie night together with Bride of Chucky in one of their selections. I don't want to spoil it. So you go and listen, dear listener. You should be able to find them right, you know, under us, you know, or above us, wherever you're listening to us. If you have us in your queue, you should have Horror Movie Night in your queue as well.
Chip, and Jersey Ghouls.
All of the people that we love. So, anyways. Bride of Chucky. Yay.
Yay.
Another one. Down. what a strange fucking movie. Rude fucking doll. All right. Good night, Joe.
Good night, Joshua. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.